Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
I was in Australia for the past week and a half, and aside from the jet lag, one of the surprising things about spending a little time in Australia is seeing just how well Australians have taken some things in stride that here in the U.S. are almost radical taboos. Australians, for instance, before every public event, thank the spirit and contributions of Indigenous people. Australians have formally apologized for the treatment of Native peoples. In the U.S., we argue about the name of the football team, the Redskins. It was Australia's first woman Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, who led the way on Native rights, and her leadership from 2010 to 2013 was tumultuous, but there was never a question in Australia of her qualifications as a woman to lead. In the USA, a woman president has been viewed as dubious since the candidacies of Victoria Woodhull in the 1800s, a brilliant stock trader and leader of the women's suffrage movement, and civil rights activist and feminist Shirley Chisholm, the first African-American woman elected to Congress who ran for president many times. Geraldine Ferraro's stint as a VP running mate in the 1980s seems a timid step compared to India's Indira Gandhi and Pakistan's Benazir Bhutto, Argentina's Eva Perón and Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of Liberia, and that list could go on. Nancy L. Cohen is the author of Breakthrough, The Making of America's First Woman President. She says being behind Pakistan and Liberia is nothing to be proud of, especially after there have been so many brave American women politicians who have taken the plunge.
These pioneers had to, in some ways, put themselves out there at a time when they knew there was absolutely no chance for a woman to be president. They had to make that symbolic statement. That's really what Woodhull's candidacy was about. And Chisholm's was about, you know, at this cusp of a women's movement rising in the United States, but this kind of impregnable wall, keeping the old boys club cozy inside. It was just not ready to fall, and it took a lot of women behind the women so we could get to where we are today in 2016, where we absolutely are ready to elect a woman president.
One of the platforms or springboards that politicians will launch themselves into a presidential campaign is the Senate. There have been a lot of very successful women senators, not enough, but why wasn't Barbara Mikulski a presidential candidate, or Dianne Feinstein a presidential candidate, or Barbara Boxer, or Olympia Snow?
What's interesting is that Texas Republican Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson seriously considered running for president several times, 2000, 2004, 2008. And what her case shows is that timing is everything, right? There are very few elections where it's an open seat, where there's not a clear party incumbent. So Hutchinson looked at it and thought that she could win and didn't think that voters would apply a double standard to her. But she was from Texas, and George W. Bush was rising, as she said. You know, I looked at it, and I was blocked out. And I think that's probably true of a lot of women who have been senators and governors. I honestly believe that there were probably a number of senators, particularly on the Democratic side, that would have run had Hillary not run.
Is Hillary Clinton a part of this culture and network that has grown the political power of women, or is she someone who rode along the success of Bill Clinton, being first lady in Arkansas and then first lady in the White House, and now finds herself, sure, senator, secretary of state, but nevertheless, she's also like, you know, Indira Gandhi or Benazir Bhutto. She's a little dynastic.
That's kind of the $64,000 question. I think she is more a part of this network. When she was first lady, she worked with a lot of women senators on a lot of the pro-women initiatives, whether it's FDA approval for emergency contraception, whether it was the National Institutes of Health, studies on women, not just men, things of this sort. She was key in making sure that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was appointed to the Supreme Court, that Madeleine Albright was appointed Secretary of State. And then when she was in the Senate, all the women senators I talked to, and I talked to a number of them, Republican and Democratic, had very high praise for her ability to work across the aisle and collaborate with the other women senators.
Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin did very poorly with the women's vote because her stance on women's issues and her lack of leadership really disturbed a lot of women. And many of the Republican women I talked to did not like her and may have supported her because they were supporting McCain, but were very disappointed that she, for a moment, became the face of Republican women.
Tulsi Gabbard.
Tulsi Gabbard. I interviewed her. Interesting woman, rising leader. She did endorse Sanders recently. So I think it shows that women are not monolithic. And what I also think this shows is that there's good and surprising news in this, in that voters really are not applying a double standard to candidates. Women don't lose elections because of sexism. I spent a lot of time going through it. I know this is kind of a shocking idea given the kind of sexism and misogyny we've seen thrown at candidates in this race. Voters make their decisions based on ideology and partisanship, temperament, character. I do think that someone like Tulsi Gabbard will support whoever the Democratic nominee is.
What observations do you have about the, you know, the long narrative of Hillary Clinton talking about, I'm not going to make cookies, or I'm not a stand by your man person, and everything she went through with the whole Monica Lewinsky business? How do you think that relates to this narrative of women's emergence in politics?
Hillary Clinton was the person, more than anyone else in this country, who absorbed the anti-feminist, anti-woman, misogynist backlash. So I think part of her defensiveness comes out of bearing that history. So I do think there's still a residual hostility, misogyny, backlash to women being equal to men and men having to compete on a level playing field with women. Hillary has done a lot to break that down. All the women in politics, particularly, you know, my hat's off to them. They have done a tremendous amount to change America's perception about what women can do.
Nancy Cohen is author of Breakthrough: The Making of America's First Woman President. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.